I found an old VHS tape recently. It was an edit record of some film footage I shot in 1985 in a suburb called Gordon Head, where I was a teenager. I'd projected the film onto a white wall and reshot it with a friend's camcorder so I could log without scratching my only print. But I never finished that film. The footage was lost. It was thrown in the garbage by an angry roommate. She was pregnant and wanted the room in the fridge for her free food from the clinic, and bags of white milk, even though she was a rich girl slumming from the suburbs. I guess she thought she was justified. I was on the other side of the country at the time. That's a long story. She was a tester. She'd test to see if you got mad, and if you didn't, she'd keep on testing you until you got mad. And I never got mad back then. I was proud of it. I used to say I could always see the other person's side of the story. Then she threw my film in the garbage. I started to make the film after witnessing the murder of a 13-year-old girl. She was shot by a sniper in the neighborhood where I grew up. I even lay on my side on the road where she died. I don't know what I expected to feel. Empathy. Sympathy. But it was just hard concrete. I filmed the split levels, service stations, and the air raid siren over the old Gordon Head store, while my friend Andrew drew in oil pastels. We talked about the light there, on misting, rainy dusks, even though it was just a suburb. I was across Gordon Head Road, getting out of my 1964 Pontiac Canso in my old friend Dave's driveway. I heard a crack that bounced off the houses. It wasn't like a TV gunshot. It was like hearing a thin fracture form in the rest of the day. And as I looked up, the girl with her friend. They were barely teenagers, in their little jean jackets, laughing hysterically and poking each other on their way to my old gray block high school down Gordon Head Road. The girl suddenly jerked her head to one side and fell forward, down and down. She hit hard and skidded on the gravel shoulder. I thought it was strange. She didn't put out her hands to break her fall. Some cars stopped, and a businessman with slicked hair and a red tie crouched beside her with his man's hand on her little moving back. And I ran into Dave's house and phoned the ambulance. I argued with the operator because there was no 911 in our city yet. And I couldn't find a phone book. But she wouldn't connect me or give me the number until I started yelling at her right into the phone that I could see out from Dave's second-story kitchen window straight down at the girl's still writhing body. Her friend bending over, covering her own face with her bird's hands, bending low and bending low, low, her mouth open. And then she connected me, and I stood and watched, and my old friend Dave there beside me, wondering what. After a while, two ambulance vans came, but she'd already stopped moving. The four men, all in white, went inside a van with the girl for a long time. But finally, three of them exited slowly. Two got into the other van, and one got into the driver's seat of her van, and they backed and turned and drove away without lights. And I kept thinking, why doesn't this feel more unusual? I mean, I'd already seen it thousands of times on TV. Over 18,000 times I read once in a magazine. 18,000 deaths by the time you're 16. But this was real, and I didn't feel anything different. Yeah, I felt dead, like I was in shock. But that was the same deadness I always felt. Except when I was drunk and felt the panic and anger from feeling dead all the time. Or did I just think I should feel angry or horrified or terrorized at the way things were with the nuclear end of the world? Ronald Reagan, sky blue Chevrolet wagons, and all those families and all those silent houses. I used to hit things back then. I punched power poles and thick doors. The pain felt right. And for the rest of that day, I suddenly remember what happened and feel guilty. I thought it was wrong to think about other things, but I just couldn't keep my mind on it. It would move away. I wanted to think something important about it. It was in headlines, and people all over the city talked about it. On the sidewalks and in restaurants, it really affected them. Nothing like this has ever happened here, they said. And I was at the next table, but I wouldn't say anything. Just get up and leave. But at work, it turned out I was in a hair trigger temper. And 4 days after, my boss looked at me, and I realized I'd been yelling at this guy for no good reason. And from my boss's expression, I knew. And he said gently, why don't you take a couple of days off? So I went to Long Beach with Dave, and we camped, and I tried to cry by talking about it on the sand, by the fire, with the waves rushing in at me and out again into the dark. And I did cry for just a second, and I felt a little better. A few weeks later, I went back to school out east, and I might have forgotten about it, except I kept witnessing violence for the whole next year. Little things like rounding a corner on a downtown sidewalk and stepping into a pool of blood with no one else around. Thick and dark red stretching across from the building to the curb. Or a 40-ish woman running in front of a car below the school cafeteria windows. The hollow metal and stuffed pillow sound of her body hitting the hood. Her head knocking in the windshield and her being thrown 10 feet, lying in a curled, still lump. And two teenage boys in a knife fight behind the supermarket with red drops spraying all over the white cement, and them still circling each other. A crowd of kids with books and knapsacks watching and not moving. And my feet walking me quickly away like it hadn't happened. And the jumper on the subway. The screaming train brakes and the doors suddenly slamming open. And a woman at the front on the platform screaming on and on like she was stuck inside the train brakes, bleeding from my ears and echoing off the plastic tiles As I ran up the escalators as fast as I could, panting, panicking. And finally, out into the cold sunlight, gasping for space, and I walked for miles in the cold that day. And in a rich mall, a middle-aged man in a Mackinaw had just jumped from the upper tier of the sparkling glass atrium. Was lying in my path as I exited the subway and rounded the orange juice kiosk on my way to class. I almost stepped in the man's face. I stood there as he lay staring up at me with one bulging, red-soaked eye and the side of his face mashed in purple. And I turned and walked away, but not too fast. Like a criminal trying to look cool. Winding through the crowd, trying to find the goddamned exit. And finally, there was the motorcyclist in the intersection outside my apartment late at night. I ran and put a blanket on him, because I'd heard that's what you should do. But I made the mistake of looking inside the little window of his helmet. His round, gold-framed glasses were shattered. He was smashed and he was gone. His girlfriend stood in the middle of the street, gulping for air and hugging herself. Tight like he used to. Strong but soft after lovemaking. It stopped then. Or I stopped seeing so much of it. And I shot this footage. I even lay down with the camera on the side of the road where she lay dying. Where she died.